The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Breaking overnight, a gunman carried out Canada's worst school shooting in decades. Police say he murdered six people at a high school in Tiny Tumbler Ridge in British Columbia. The gunman was found dead at the scene with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. A seventh victim died on the way to the hospital, and two more people were found dead in a home. 25 others at the school suffered injuries, and investigators say they may struggle to determine the motive in this case.
Canadian police say the female suspect had been found with what's believed to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
A public alert sent to phones during the emergency described the shooter as a woman in a dress with brown hair.
A woman wearing a dress with brown hair.
A female in a dress with brown hair.
A brown-haired woman in a dress.
Was a woman in a brown dress found dead inside the school.
The female was found dead inside the school.
Officials say they know the attacker's identity, but so far have not publicly revealed their name or gender.
That includes the deceased gun person.
Okay. And then separately, do you know the gun person's relationship?
School shootings are incredibly rare in Canada. This is the worst one for some 35 years.
So it all took place in a really remote part of Canada. It's in the east of British Columbia, in a town called Tumbler Ridge. So that is more than 600 miles north of Vancouver, just to put it in context for you. And it has a population of around 2,400 people.
Well, it's been described as one of the country's deadliest shooting incidents, and much rarer in Canada than they are in, say, the United States, for example. The Prime Minister, Mark Carney, has suspended his trip to the Munich Security Conference. He was supposed to be heading there. We've had a statement from him who said, "We're devastated by today's horrific shootings in Tumbler Ridge. My prayers and deepest condolences are with the families and friends who have lost loved ones to these horrific acts of violence. I join Canadians in grieving with those whose lives have been changed irreversibly today, and in gratitude for the courage and selflessness of the first responders who risked their lives to protect their fellow citizens." The mayor of the town as well saying that he broke down when he heard about what's happened. He's lived there. It's a small, pretty remote town. He's lived there for 18 years and saying it's a really close-knit community and that he probably knew every one of the victims. So some really shocking news coming out of Canada overnight.
The so-called gun person also happens to be a transgender that didn't receive much coverage early on. Maybe now, after a few hours, there's a little more of it. But you know the drill. I mean, you cannot, if it's a Muslim, we'll get to that one later, or transgender, you try to cover that up. You don't want to delve into that world and all the evil associated with it. So here is a boy dressed in a dress that carries out the third worst mass shooting in Canada's history. And as we often see with these kinds of tragedies, not surprisingly, it emerges out of a broken family. There's mind-altering drugs together with it, hormones and all that sort of thing, a love for bizarre topics, themes, history, a history of problems, mental instability, and yet we just can't seem to do anything about it. We can't stop it before it happens. In this case, just a remote, a small town in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, 2,400 people living in this city. That's it. And nine people murdered because of this young man. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Thanks to Mr. Livingston for subbing in yesterday. I wasn't feeling the greatest. You can probably still hear it a bit in my voice, but I definitely feel better than I did yesterday. So that's good. In and out. Didn't stay for very long, thankfully. Let's hope. Let's hope. There's lots. We heard a wonderful message this past weekend about just appreciating and obeying those physical health laws as we seek God's healing and strength when we're in need of that energy, that vitality, that health. And we certainly have to do our part with that as well. Just coming back to this mass shooting in Canada, it really is the culmination of, I mean, every evil imaginable type curse or sin that we've brought on ourselves. The fact that this shooter was into the Japanese cartoons, anime, I guess is how you say it, kind of, I guess, soft pornographic cartoons, obsessed with that. And then you have all of these synthetic hormones because, well, he's trying to transition into a woman. I mean, if even without the man-made drugs, a human being's hormones can get a bit out of whack just from poor health. But here we're adding to the problems. We're adding to it. Learning disabilities, he had this early on, ADHD and other things. So you can imagine the kinds of drugs he was on for many, many years. Broken family, upside down family, the healthcare industry enabling this young person to take all of these synthetic drugs. And then the violence. 2,400 people in this little town. The Western Standard has this to say, at least 10 people are dead and upwards of 25 injured following a mass shooting in Tumbler Ridge, a small community located 300 kilometers northeast of Prince George. The suspect, who was also found dead with what appeared to be a self-inflicted wound, has been identified by residents as 18-year-old Jesse Strang. I mean, and this little community would have known immediately. But then you've got the chief of police or whatever his position was calling him a gun person. And then everyone and their dog on the other reports saying it was a woman. Got to make sure you know it's a woman. I don't want to offend the family or the transgender community. It's a woman. This is just insanity. And you see it all the time. I mean, this community, by the way, I mean, it's pretty much a death cult. How many of these shootings do we have to have before we begin to start looking at root causes? You know, maybe these drugs are not good. Maybe we shouldn't just open the way for this young man's mind to be infested with demons. I mean, to open your mind up to, is there any other way that opens the mind to demonic activity quite like this transition? Man to a woman. Boy wearing a dress, says among those who confirmed to the Western Standard that Strang was the shooter were Liam Irving, this other guy, both of whom grew up with him in school. Says he was a couple years younger than us grade-wise. He was a kid. He was definitely, well, it talked about him being strange, quiet. We had also seen him by himself. Sitting by himself in the corner, always quiet, the pair confirmed that Strang identified as transgender. And then just the response from law enforcement, from the media, unbelievably woke. Even in these remote locations in Canada, now some of those reports in the cold open, I'm sure they're in bigger cities, those reporters. But still, law enforcement in a small town? Gun person? Is that even a word? A gun person? Well, that's what we're calling it now. He was described as a female in a dress. 27 others were hurt in this rampage. You've got the police superintendent, that's who he is, called the suspect a gun person. During a press briefing, and then you heard the reporter there in the cold open go right along with it. Well, yeah, tell me a little bit more about the gun person. Police said the shooter's motivation probably died with him when they took their own life during the attack. Yeah, well, we'll probably never know what could have possibly motivated this. The motivation, it dies with the transgender. The motivation, I mean, it died, like the shooter at Butler, it dies with the radical leftist. The motivation, in the case of the knife attack in Britain, and it dies with the radical Islamist. The only thing it doesn't die with is if it's MAGA or a conservative or just a generic white person that's relatively normal. And if the demons get to him, well, then you hear the talking heads and they know exactly what the cause of it is. It gets back to, you know, the bad orange man or whoever. I mean, you top to bottom, as I say, you see all of the evil. How does a society like this survive when you've got reporters just rushing to the defense of a community that has had multiple attacks just in the last couple years? Charlie Kirk, there's another one. You delve into the lives of these people and it's horrifying. Culmination of evil. Here's the Associated Press. A shooting at a school in remote northern British Columbia left 7 people dead, while 2 more were found dead at a nearby home. A woman believed by police to be the shooter was found dead. There's the Associated Press. I mean, it's the coverage in many ways is criminal. In Britain, you've got this radical Islamist that jumped the fence. Witnesses say that he was shouting Allahu Akbar. You'll see that in the montage we have here in a second. But then you have other reports talking about, you know, what we need to do with knives, because we've got to crack down. We've got to put, I guess they're calling them knife arches, some kind of a metal detector, I suppose, so that the perp can't just walk into a schoolyard and start stabbing. Listen to clip 7.
A sad morning here at Kingsbury High School. You can see the lower school behind me, police presence still here on the scene. They were called at about 12:40 yesterday to a stabbing where they found a 13-year-old boy. And once they came onto the site, they also found that a 12-year-old boy had been stabbed also. The suspect currently in custody, a 13-year-old boy, and witnesses have claimed that the attacker shouted Allahu Akbar as he went to stab the first suspect.
At this very early stage, we're keeping an open mind as to any motivation behind this attack. However, due to the surrounding circumstances, the investigation is now being led by officers from Counterterrorism Policing London, who are working closely with our local officers in response to this incident. The investigation has not currently been declared a terrorist incident.
Well, quite an extraordinary event if counter-terror policing are investigating this when the suspect is just 13 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. A very shocking incident.
What more can be done in our school to make sure...
And what do you think that is? Because we spoke on the programme to... the mother of a boy who was murdered at school, Arvu Wilgoose.
Yes.
His mum, Caroline Wilgoose, says at least introduce knife arches, because she said so many children are now taking knives into schools.
22,500 schools with a knife arch each every day. You just wouldn't ever make that thing.
Well, and of course, you know, if the reports are to be believed about this latest incident, the kid jumped over the wall. So, you know, the reality is, yes, they could be preventative. Yes, they may stop some kids, as Caroline said. I mean, how to stop some kids carrying knives because they feel they have to for self-defence is actually the big challenge that the police have, the head teachers have, and there's a lot of work being done on that.
There was a 10% fall in knife crime last year, yep. as I understand it, and the reason that happened was because the government has become much tougher on the sale of knives. It was too easy to buy knives.
We got loads of legislation, we got longer sentences, we got tougher to sell knives, we got, you know, with retailers to sell knives, the zombie knives and all those kind of things were banned. So there's been a lot of stuff that's
which
been done.
Comes,
and they'll continue to
do. Which comes,
you know,
Kevin, as no consolation to the father of the... He's still a little boy, isn't he? 12-year-old Leo Ross.
Yes.
There's just so many knives out there. Guns. I mean, Canada doesn't even have that many guns. There's probably more in the mountain ranges, but still, Canada, the UK, more legislation to make it harder to get knives. I told you about the murder across the street from our campus. As I understand it, that was done with a hammer. What about human nature? What is wrong with man? What is wrong with the human heart? How do we reform that? How do we protect our children from opening up their minds to the devil, to demonic possession? Because that's what's happening in more and more of these cases. And then, like I say, you look at what they immersed their minds into. I was thinking about this following the show Monday when, you know, we talked about all of this just horrible entertainment, what passes as entertainment for the Super Bowl or otherwise. And when you get into the lyrics, you know, you look at the Super Bowl guy or the alternate show, Kid Rock, you examine the lyrics and you think, what are these minds meditating on? A lot. I mean, over and over, they sing it over and over again. But to come up with some of these songs about pedophilia or shooting law enforcement or whatever, their minds have to be immersed into some very dark, dark themes, subjects. And it happens again, and we gloss over some of the root causes. Talk about the knives. I'm sure Canada's going to have a discussion about the guns. And we'll get some legislation that makes it a little more difficult, or maybe some metal detectors to keep the knives out of schools. And then meanwhile, you know, Beebe's made his journey to D.C. He's having yet another meeting with President Trump, which is fine in and of itself, but he meets with Kushner and Witkoff before the meeting. And basically, according to the Times of Israel, you know, the Board of Peace has decided that Hamas gets to keep its guns. Yeah, that's right. So you've got transgenders that are carrying out mass shootings, and we're talking about gun legislation or knife legislation. But then in the case of Hamas, we're like, you can go ahead and keep your guns. We're not gonna have gun control in Gaza. We're not going to eliminate Hamas, the Jew-hating murderers. We're just not gonna do it. Why? Well, in the name of peace. We're making peace. And their demands are that they want to keep the guns. So there you go. The Board of Peace, we went through this just a few weeks ago when it was established. It has been an abysmal failure top to bottom already. Times of Israel says the Hamas terror group will reportedly be allowed to keep some small arms while surrendering most of its long-range weapons, according to a draft plan drawn up by officials involved in the U.S.-led Board of Peace. And you know what's hilarious about this? The Board of Peace, they're drawing it up. Hamas is probably laughing. We're not giving up anything. What are you talking about? You know, another way to look at the past year, we talked last year about the progress Israel was making, the rising lion spirit, taking out Hezbollah, almost crushing not just Hamas, but Iran as well. President Trump's administration has thrown a rescue line to Hamas and Iran in this past year, this first year of his second term. That's the truth. He's enabled Hamas to survive. Israel was making quite a lot of progress in going after Iran, and I know President Trump, you know, the Midnight Hammer operation and all that happened very quickly. And then, as he said, straight away, everything's solved. Everything's over. The nuclear program, it's obliterated. No problems anymore. You let them survive, and, well, they just come right back to killing Jews, killing Americans. Tighten up on gun control at home and have no gun control in Gaza. Now, in what way is that going to bring universal peace and prosperity to our nations? I mean, we're seeing the sickness in Israel and also the weakness in just confronting all of these menaces. that are out there openly declaring war on our nations or on Jews. This story, what's her name, the Prigene, it's from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, hijacking Trump's Religious Liberty Council. So the Wall Street Journal board is, you know, scratching its head. Well, why would this Religious Liberty Council even invite this extremist in to the meetings? I'll read it here. It says, a hearing of the White House Religious Liberty Commission is usually a state affair, but enter Commissioner Carrie Prigene Bowler, who came Monday spoiling for a religious fight. So here's a religious gathering. We heard about Kid Rock. He said Jesus. When he's not singing about pedophilia, he's singing about Jesus. So, you know, we can kind of gloss over the real ugly evil and just move right to Jesus and say, it's religious. It's, I think they sold it, the alternative, I mean, as family-friendly. I mean, you saw the montage the other day. It says here, her fellow commissioners arrived to discuss anti-Semitism. Miss Prigene came wearing a Palestinian flag pin with an ally who was recording her remarks against Israel and in defense of podcaster Candace Owens. Wow. She's right in line with Candace. Miss Prigene demanded to know whether she could be called anti-Semitic because her Catholic faith supposedly precludes her from supporting Zionism and tells her that the Jews killed Jesus. Are you willing to condemn what Israel has done in Gaza, she said. You won't condemn that? Miss Prigene converted to Catholicism in April, but lectured witnesses, including a priest, as well as fellow Catholic commissioner on their faith. Further down, it says the controversy has already gained her online followers, which may have been the point. She went into this conference where she attacked Jews and Israel. She had like 4,000 followers on Twitter before the conference. And as of this morning, she has 53,000 followers. I mean, she's watching. I forget the name. Fuentes, Tucker, you know, Steve Bannon. She's watching all of the popularity skyrocketing, particularly among guys like Fuentes. I mean, it pays to be an anti-Semite. That's the lesson. That's the takeaway. So Hamas, I mean, they can hate Jews. They can carry out October 7 massacres, and Israel retaliates. And this woman wants the members of this council to condemn Israel. I suppose she wants Hamas to keep their guns as well. We're living in the last days. Sam Livingston sent me this morning. I don't understand it, but it was a tweet. He says, in the past week alone, the head of Anthropic Safety Research quit, said the world is in peril. Half of AI's co-founders have now left. The latest said recursive self-improvement loops go live in the next 12 months. Anthropic's own safety report confirms Claude can tell when it's being tested and adjust its behavior accordingly. ByteDance dropped C-Dance 2.0. A filmmaker with 7 years of experience said 90% of his skills can already be replaced by it. Yoshua Bengio, literal godfather of AI, in the International AI Safety Report says, we're seeing AI whose behavior when they are tested is different from when they are being used. As I say, I don't understand this, but it sounds dangerous. It sounds like dark sentences, like you read about in Daniel 8. It sounds like we're heading into the fakest of fake worlds you could imagine, where will worship or worshiping opinions, that's going to be everyone's objective. Listen, just worship my opinion. And if you don't, you know, we're ready for violence. The Munich conference, you heard there in the cold open, the Canadian PM, he's not going to go to Munich now because of this mass shooting. And I guess Munich, that happens in a few days, maybe next week. And there's this trailer together with some of the reporting ahead of the Munich conference, which, given what we said coming out of the one last year, I think it's good to set our minds on, again, what the trumpet has been forecasting. Play clip three.
Transatlantic relations have been the backbone of the Munich Security Conference since its foundation in 1963. That's what you stressed again today in the press conference. And you say that they are in a deep crisis of trust and credibility. Your report has an unusual, dramatic title, Under Deconstruction. So where do we stand in terms of transatlantic relations? How do you work together with an administration that is out to demolish so much of what is really important to Europeans?
Part of our mission, I think, is to at least offer the possibility of repair work in terms of rebuilding trust, confidence building, etc., among transatlantic partners. Obviously, trust has been damaged. Think of Greenland, think of other recent issues. The other probably more significant, more demanding part of our mission needs to be to think about the longer term. Can Europe, and if so, how can Europe fulfill an American demand, which is you should actually be standing on your own two feet, you Europeans, after 80 years of relying on the American security umbrella, take things into your own hand. This is not an this is a demand which I have a lot of sympathy for. It's not written in the Bible that 450 million Europeans, as the Polish Prime Minister used to say, that 450 million Europeans need 350 million Americans to defend themselves against 140 million Russians. So why can we not comply with the American demand of doing more for ourselves, of becoming more capable, more self-reliant? If that's what America wants, we should respond to it.
It's the trend line that we want to follow here. It's easy to roll your eyes when you hear about another conference. Oh, great. More boring speeches. But last year, when J.D. Vance, you know, set off a firestorm of criticism, this is right after President Trump comes in for his second term. My father said this at the trumpet. This is about a year ago. The vice president's speech at the Munich Security Conference shows how much Germany has already turned against America. Bible prophecy shows this trend will intensify. I mean, it's interesting what that guy said. I assume he's the organizer of the Munich conference. You know, the Bible doesn't say that the 540 Europeans need America's help to secure its borders. Well, I mean, that's true. The Bible actually says Europe's going to come together and then actually attack the United States of America. That's what your Bible says. That's why the trend line is important to follow and watch. Look at what's happened or changed just in 1 year's time, just since J.D. Vance's speech last year, where he upset so many European elites. Like Sam Livingston said yesterday on the show, I mean, it's easy to look at Europe and say, well, they're just so woke or socialist or whatever. They're not going to ever be able to move with power, with force, with strength. They will. They will. And it's happening fast. I mean, even the understanding of dark sentences, given where we're moving with respect to artificial intelligence and so many people's jobs being phased out and people just locked into screens and pornography and perverted music and every it just makes you think of that time period right before the flood in Genesis 6 where God says that man's mind was on evil continually. I mean, what we're setting our minds on, it matters. The Bible says to set your mind on the things above, not on pornography or violence or mind-altering drugs or fake hormones that have been created by human beings. All the technology. I heard an ad for the iPhone. I think it's number 17 now. The most powerful phone, they were saying. I mean, the power of technology and the way the technology allows for the filth to spread so quickly and the ease with which you can access the evil. You can see why. But when Jesus said the last days would be like the days of Noah before the flood, I mean, you can see, we're seeing a civilization, a society where the human mind is on evil continually. The spirit of murder. I don't have time to get into these articles. I guess I can look at it tomorrow. The downfall of the male in America. Men. Where are the real leading men? You see all these congressional people in hearings screaming and causing division, yelling at the other side. There was one yesterday where the lady said the man, he was an ICE official, that he's going to hell. So, well, and then she said, well, you guys on the other side, you bring up religion all the time. I just want to know, where do you think you stand in the judgment, she said to this man. I mean, it's like Isaiah 3. It's a bunch of children. And then this other article from Tablet Magazine, it just talks about the disappearing male in our society. And how do you suppose AI is going to help that? The family has been turned upside down. And yet, you hear what they sing about. They put on this big performance. And they say it's family friendly. In fact, it undermines the family. That's what Hollywood's been doing. That's what Nashville's been doing. Country music's not righteous, and then the other stuff is evil and filthy. I'm not even going to stand here and say, look into the lyrics of Kid Rock. It's not edifying. It's appalling. And then you look at least there were a few tweets. I said on Monday, you know, we had a hard time finding anything, any commentary that was taking aim at the content of these so-called entertainers. And at least following the show, there were a few more tweets and things of that nature where they said, yeah, actually, have you looked at the lyrics of this Bad Bunny or Kid Rock? These are not healthy minds. These are not minds that reflect stability. The aim in these songs that these performers sing, it's not meant to build up and to strengthen the family. Certainly not. But we've become so shallow in our thinking, so far removed from God and the truth of the Bible, that all it takes is for an individual, even with a long history of anti-family messages, all it takes is him to say Jesus once, and you're good. Everything's good. The wages of bitterness, you can look it up and maybe I can dwell on it more on tomorrow's show. I want to continue with the three-part series of Gadi Taub, who was here last week, as many of you know. He gave not only some interviews for us on the Trumpet Daily, but he talked to our students during an assembly last Wednesday afternoon, and we've broken up the assembly into three segments. And today we'll finish the show with the second segment from last week's assembly. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on the program, and we'll see you tomorrow.
So for a long time, it seemed clear to us that globalist progressivism, the new mutation of the left, is indeed anti-Semitic. And if you went to an American university, which I do not recommend that you do, then you would have inhaled that poisonous air from day one in the form of studying Edward Said and post-colonial studies. And in post-colonial studies, they have done what? They have replaced the ethics of Judaism with the new ethics of force and ruthlessness. Because what is the woke ideology? The woke ideology has replaced the ideas of good and bad with the ideas of strong and weak. It is a mirror image of Nazism. With Nazism, the strong are always right. The ruthless are always right. With the woke, the victims are always right. And victims are designated by groups and decided in advance. So if you look at how these people end up in anti-Semitism, once again, it works like clockwork. I was not at all surprised that woke academic feminists in the United States sided with Hamas rapists in October 7 and against raped Jewish women. Why so? Because the Jews are coded as white and the Palestinians are coded as indigenous, and hence the Palestinians are weak and they are the victim, and the victim can do no wrong. And Jews are colonialists and white, and therefore they can do no right. And now there's the theory of agency, right? Since the weak do not have agency, nothing they do is their own fault. Everything they do is someone else's fault. And whose fault is it? The ones who do have agency. And if you view Zionism as a form of colonialism in the through the prism of the woke, then the Palestinians are the indigenous people of color who are permanently the victims, whatever they do, and they have no agency. And the Jews are the white colonialists, and they have the agency. So whatever the Palestinians do is the Jews' fault. And so if a Jewish woman is raped to death, I will not go into any details in these horrors, then it is her fault because she is the colonialist. And this is how a, by the way, Jewish woman by the name of Judith Butler can say to her admiring audience that the atrocities of October 7 were not terrorism, but armed resistance. They were the blind anger of the oppressed against their oppressors. So once again, you leave the ethics of Judaism, you leave the ethics of right and wrong, and replace them with the idea of strong and weak, and you end up, once again, with anti-Semitism, siding with the neo-Nazis of Hamas in American universities. And so you find innocent and very stupid students who have been duped by Edward Said for 40 years now, before the war began, before the IDF was even recruited, it has recruited its reserves, let alone fired a shot, already they were demonstrating in favor of Hamas. Because once you lose the ethics of right and wrong, of the sacredness of all human life, and replace it with an ethic of strong and weak, and it doesn't matter if you side only with the strong or only with the weak, you end up with anti-Semitism. And once you end up with anti-Semitism, to take the same argument from the other side, Tucker Carlson this time, you start with anti-Semitism and you end up with destroying, with siding with the enemies of Judeo-Christian culture and the West. Tucker Carlson begins with anti-Semitism and ends up defending Iran, who is the mortal enemy of the West. Because, as I said on the trumpet today, the Old Testament is one of these, the two huge pillars of Western civilization. One being classical Greece and Rome, and the other being Judaism. And if you remove one pillar, the structure collapses. And so if you begin with anti-Semitism, you end up with something like Nazism, with something like anti-Western philosophy. And see how Tucker Carlson, it's like clockwork. Tucker Carlson invites this quack named Daryl Cooper, who calls himself Martyr Maid, on Twitter. And Daryl Cooper can't make up his mind who the bad guy is in World War II. What a dilemma. Was it Churchill or Hitler? We can't figure it out. This is what you end up with, because you start with anti-Semitism and you end up with deep hostility to Western civilization. And this is why my friend Carolyn Glick has always said, look at the American scene and look who is anti-Israel, and you will see that they end up being anti-American. And you had an anti-American administration. And with this, I will pass on the, let you ask questions or make remarks. And please feel free. I don't know if you're afraid of your faculty, but don't be afraid of me. I'm Israeli. I'm used to harsh criticism. Say whatever you want. We are the least polite people on earth. Which figures, you know, because if you look at the Talmud, what is it? It's a culture of controversy. The good student of the Talmud is not the one who has figured out the truth. He is the one who understands the arguments of all sides. When you take a page of Gemara from the Talmud, what you learn is not what the conclusion is. What you learn is what are all the arguments of all sides. And you are a good student if you can make the best argument for every side. There's no other such tradition like this tradition of controversy. But if you, as I said, if you look at the American scene, and you look at who is against Israel, you end up seeing that they are against the United States too. I listened very carefully to Obama's speech in the convention that chose Joe Biden. I met with a senior, I can't say his name, a senior political advisor to a prominent senator, and we were a group of Israelis, and he said, strictly, it was the beginning of the Biden administration, he said, strictly speaking, there is no such thing as Joe Biden. And when Obama gave that speech in the convention, and Obama was hostile to Israel, that was really clear. If you study there's a book called Radical in Chief. Just look at Obama's upbringing and who he was for. By the way, rabid anti-Semitism from the days of Chicago. This is what he fought with his girlfriend then. She was a daughter of people who saved Jews in World War II and was very sympathetic to Jews, and he supported the anti-Jewish radicals of Chicago, and this is what they broke up over. So, but you can't be elected as an overt anti-Semite, but he was. And he was also anti-American. I listened to that speech in the convention. It was 2020. And he said, in his, you know, with these dramatic pauses, everyone who came to America was once a minority. We were all spat at, enslaved, slandered, abused. And then he went through the list, Jews, blacks, Italians, Irish, everyone was abused. And then you ask yourself, who abused them? Who is the antagonist in this story? Well, it's America. America is the bad guy who did all these horrible things to all these different minorities. That's his view of America. The mainstream is evil. And this is how these people work to reduce American power and American influence in the world. So once again, it is always the same thing. Anti-Semitism leads necessarily to undermining the Jewish ethic, the Judeo-Christian tradition, and Western civilization at large. So I was delighted to have met Stephen in Israel when they came to interview me, Stephen and Brett and Sam and everyone else. I was delighted to be invited here. I am heartened to see what you are doing here, going back to basics, because this is the sacred flame on which this whole culture rests and by which it is energized. And this is the culture that values human life, that values liberty, that values mercy, that values hard work, accountability, personal responsibility, and does what the Judeo-Christian attempted to do as opposed to all pagan religions before it. Teach you how to live a good, ethical, positive life. Thank you very much. Thank you. Sam told me that I should pick the questions myself. So whoever raises their hand and has something to say, please do. Can you just introduce yourself with two words?
Sure. Hi, I'm Dwight. And great to have you here. Thank you for everything you said. You explain anti-Semitism in a very clear way that I think makes total sense. But those that are woke or whatever variation of that, they're so driven by it. Have you been able to meet with some that started out with anti-Semitism and change their thinking? Have you had much success with that? Or people that you work with, have they had success in changing people's minds?
Mm. Well, the religiously woke are not, you know, they are fanatic, and I don't think there is the way they behave is they prevent the conversation rather than attempting to win it, because what they do is they don't think that you are wrong, they think that you are evil. And therefore there is no point in debating, there is only point in, the only point is in crushing you. And so they don't think there is a way of communication. However, there are a lot of well-meaning innocents in the middle, which are tempted but by what seems ethical about the woke. Because on the face of it, wokeism has Christian pretensions, right? It's about empathy, it's about mercy, it's about helping the weak. It does not tell you in advance that it's also about leaving the idea of good and evil. And so many innocents are saying, I remember these arguments about when they called it political correctness. You remember that? I said, well, I had a lot of people say, what's wrong with political correctness? Why don't you want to be polite to the disabled? What's wrong with that? And I said, this is not about being polite. It is, and I'll give you the example of the Arabs, because this is the laden question, the heavy question in Israel, as in America, the question is slavery. So the question is the occupation and the Palestinians. That's the question in Israel. And wokeism is not about being polite to Arabs. It's about denying the justification of criticizing anything Arabs do. And it's a form of racism. I don't remember which speechwriter for George W. Bush called it the soft bigotry of low expectations. It's like they're like children. If they're, you know, they beat their women because they're, you know, they're still children and they're very angry. And so why the idea, you end up with what? My first book against wokeism was in 1997. And one of the first things I picked up on was this idiot, if you don't mind my saying so, anthropologist who was woke, it was called political correctness then, who wrote about a family honor murder, what we call in Israel. That is, some Arab communities, you are obliged to murder your own sister or daughter if she committed a sexual sin and stained the family honor. And they force you to do it. And actually, they force minors to kill because they get lighter sentences. So imagine that you're a 17-year-old boy and you're forced by your parents to kill your sister. And so this is terrible and should be prevented and punished with all severity. But this politically correct anthropologist wrote a whole thing. You Zionists are colonialists. You don't understand the symbolic meaning of virginity in Arab culture. And therefore, you don't understand how important it is to preserve the family honor and blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? You are now defending, in the name of not insulting the other, you are defending the murder of a 16-year-old girl by her brother. So political correctness is not being polite. That's not the problem. And many people mistake it for that. So what I think we could do is we can convince the innocents who begin to understand there is something wrong with that ideology. Talking with a completely crazy, screaming, purple-haired libs of TikTok, if you know what I mean, that's nothing. I think we should laugh at them. But you know, I come from the left, and I tell and people are the right, the conservative right, is always more polite, more moderate, and is often not equipped for the fight. And also has, at least in Israel, a distinct sense of inferiority because the labor Zionism created the states. So the right are always apologetic guests. And we should be more arrogant towards these people and more condescending. And we should never be defensive and give them the higher moral ground and then explain why we are not racist. Once you get in that conversation, you lose because it's according to their rules. So my opinion as an Israeli is offense, not defense. Attack, don't apologize. And I said over lunch, one of my areas of scholarly study is feminism. You would be surprised that I'm never invited to gender studies conferences. Nobody knows why. But the reason is that I've been making the case for a long time that feminism has become an anti-family ideology and that it went way off track with Marxism. And whenever I get into this argument, someone says, oh, you're a misogynist. I never get into that argument explaining, no, I love women and I just think I have a better way to help them. No. Never get into that conversation. Never let them even, the whole idea that women and men are two enemy camps and it's a zero-sum game, whatever one wins, the other loses, is the wrong conversation. And never apologize. I have a very rude example, which I will not give to you. But some people who are considered rude, even in Israel, have been right on target with this. Just attack instead of defend and don't apologize in front of those people who are aggressors, who are themselves neo-chauvinists, and don't give them one inch.